Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Today is big. The next stepping stone falls in place in the presidential election process. All 50 states and the District of Columbia have certified their voters and votes in the election and named their electors, who meet today to formally cast their ballots for Vice President and President of the United States. This normally happens in person. Iowa's six Electoral College electors will meet today at 10:30 a.m. at the state capitol to cast their votes for Trump and Pence. Three states, Colorado, Nevada, and Utah, are actually holding virtual meetings by video conference due to the pandemic instead of meeting in person. Some states are also streaming the event live in an effort to increase transparency and in an effort to stave off violent protests. This is not the end of the process. I thought it was, but I looked this up last night, and it is not the end. Congress still has to accept the results on January 6th. Okay, and more on that later. Further, not today, but we will do a program on what is the last leg of the election. Furthermore, COVID's vaccine is bound to arrive this week. Distribution begins today. Thus starts the time of the vaccine. We'll speak about this with Les White from Public Health. She'll be here with Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. And we have a fashion show to talk about. This is no ordinary fashion show. Guaranteed lots of fun. So stay tuned. It's going to be a cold winter week, with days in the chilly 20s and nights in the teens. The Weather Service says that with wind chill, it could get as low as zero even during some of the days. Wednesday and Thursday should at least start to bring us sun on and off for the rest of the week and the weekend, but the highest we'll get is likely to be on Friday when we have a tiny heat wave taking us up to 40 degrees. No mention of precipitation for the next 7 days. Now here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa in the news last week.
The coronavirus, the appointment of an Iowan to a top Biden administration post, and what Iowans Googled the most this past year all made news around the state this past week. First, the coronavirus. The death toll around the state from the virus climbed to more than 3,200 by yesterday. That amounted to more than one out of every 1,000 state residents. The number of infections also continued to go up, exceeding 256,000 by yesterday. Meanwhile, the weekly White House Coronavirus Task Force said that nearly half of all nursing homes in Iowa have at least one staff member who has tested positive for the virus. It said virus levels are still high across the state and that mitigation measures should also remain high. Governor Kim Reynolds said she would extend the state's mask requirements and limitations on some indoor and outdoor gatherings until this Wednesday. She also said the state's long-term care facilities could expect to receive their first shipments of coronavirus vaccines as early as December 28th. Reynolds said the state is prioritizing health care workers and care facility residents for the first round of the Pfizer vaccine allocation. The governor also said the state will provide the 432 long-term care facilities in Iowa with personal protective equipment at no cost to those facilities, and that the state is providing temporary medical workers for some facilities. The governor had more to say, and it was about education. She said she believes parents should have the option to send their children to in-person school classes 5 days a week. She did not announce any changes to her emergency proclamation governing in-person instruction at schools. Meanwhile, Des Moines public school students will be taught online at least through the winter break and perhaps through the end of the semester. The State Department of Education approved the district's most recent online learning waiver this past Friday. The Des Moines school semester ends January 22nd. In the Southeast Polk School District, the board voted to return its students to the classroom at various capacities starting today, Monday. From today through January 15th, elementary school students will return to full in-person learning, while secondary students will transition into a hybrid learning model. Then on January 19th, at the start of the second semester, all students, preschool through 12th grade, will move to full in-person learning. And in the Boone School District, high school students were moved into a hybrid learning model last week after a spike in coronavirus cases at the school. And in another story, word that for the first time in 10 years, the Iowa Department of Education saw a decrease in enrollment in public schools this fall. There was also word that 2,321 people at Iowa State University had tested positive for the virus since August 1st. At the University of Iowa, 2,766 people had tested positive since August 18th. And at the University of Northern Iowa, 476 people had tested positive since August 17th. In other news last week, word that Tom Vilsack is in line for another stint as U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. President-elect Joe Biden chose Vilsack, who would become Ag Secretary, for the second time. Former President Barack Obama previously had picked Vilsack in 2009. The 70-year-old Vilsack was born in Pittsburgh, received a law degree from Albany Law School in New York, and started practicing law in Mount Pleasant, Iowa in 1975. He became governor of Iowa in 1999, the first Democrat to serve as governor in 30 years. There was also word that Iowa was joining 45 other states in suing Facebook. That lawsuit alleges the company illegally stifles competition to protect its monopoly power and that it deprives its users from the benefits of competition. The suit asked the District of Columbia District Court to stop Facebook's illegal anti-competitive conduct and block the company from any such conduct in the future. But there was also word about a lawsuit the state of Iowa did not join. That was the suit filed by the Attorney General of Texas, asking the U.S. Supreme Court to stop four states from casting electoral votes in favor of the man who won the presidential election, Joe Biden. Governor Kim Reynolds said she would have joined the lawsuit in support of the Texas Attorney General, but because Iowa's Attorney General is a Democrat, Tom Miller, the state was not asked by the group of Republican Attorneys General supporting it. The U.S. Supreme Court dismissed that lawsuit this past Friday night. Also last week, word that the trial of the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts in 2018 has been postponed again, this time because of the coronavirus. Christian Bahena Rivera had been set to start trial next month, but the state Supreme Court has ordered all jury trials to be put on hold until February 1st because of the rapid spread of the virus. Now, Bahena Rivera's trial is set to start May 17th. It's the third time the trial has been delayed. In another story, a federal court ruled that the state of Iowa cannot ban five civil rights protesters from the state capitol grounds in Des Moines. The court lifted the bans that followed an altercation last July between Des Moines Black Liberation Movement supporters and law enforcement on the capitol grounds. There was also word last week about this past February's Democratic caucuses in Iowa. You likely remember that it took such a long time to release the results of those caucuses, it became a national joke. Now comes word that a new audit shows the National Democratic Party had interjected itself in the process, which slowed down and complicated efforts to release those results. The audit said the National Democratic Committee had delayed development of a new app used to report election results and then demanded last-minute technology that failed on election night. But the audit also found the state Democratic Party had failed to set up an effective backup system. In other news, there was a report last week that the number of people filing new unemployment claims in Iowa went up to nearly 11,000 in the most recent reporting week, more than double the number from the week before. At the same time, Amazon opened its new warehouse in Bondurant, bringing about 1,000 new full-time jobs to central Iowa. Workers at the 640,000-square-foot fulfillment center started handling shipments last Sunday night. Local economic development officials told the Des Moines Register they could not think of another company that brought so many jobs to Iowa so fast. And there was word that Hy-Vee is hiring 500 pharmacy technicians in Iowa to expand access to coronavirus testing and eventual vaccine distribution. Both full-time and part-time positions will be available. But there was also a report that Collins Aerospace would lay off 65 workers at its Decorah and Bellevue plants. It's the second round of job cuts for the company in 4 months. The layoffs will take place January 2nd. There was also word that Iowa high school graduates are steering their paths away from community colleges. About 83,000 students enrolled in Iowa community colleges this fall, most of them residents of the state. That was a 6% drop in enrollment compared with last year. And while that drop was likely made worse by the coronavirus, it continued a trend that's been going on for years in the state. Experts say one reason is the state's low unemployment rate, that when fewer people are jobless, fewer seek degrees or certificates from community colleges to help them get jobs. In another story, the Des Moines Register reported that a group of Iowans is pushing to have African-American pioneer George Washington Carver honored in the U.S. Capitol. They would like Carver's likeness to be placed in the Capitol's Sanctuary Hall. That hall contains two statues from each of the 50 states. Iowa's two statues are of Civil War-era Governor Samuel Kirkwood and agricultural innovator Norman Borlaug. If Carver's statue is approved, it would be the first statue of a black man among the 100 statues chosen by the states. Carver was Iowa State University's first black student. He went on to become a recognized scientist and researcher. At Cape Canaveral in Florida last week, NASA named the 18 astronauts who will train for the Artemis moon landing program. And one of them is from Iowa. Raja Shari is from Cedar Falls. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst sent out a video congratulating Shari, saying in part, "Iowa is so very proud of you." There was also word last week that President Trump had awarded Iowa wrestling icon Dan Gable the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, in a ceremony inside the Oval Office. Gable is the first wrestler to receive the honor. He won 3 state championships for Waterloo West and 2 NCAA titles for Iowa State University. He won a gold medal at the 1972 Olympics, then became wrestling coach at the University of Iowa, where his program there won 21 straight Big Ten championships. President Trump called Gable the greatest of all time in wrestling. Still in the world of sports, word last week that 2 Iowa cities would lose their minor league baseball affiliations. The Burlington Bees and the Clinton Lumberjacks did not receive invitations from Major League Baseball to continue their affiliations with big league teams. But 3 other Iowa cities have teams that did receive invitations, including the Iowa Cubs in Des Moines, the Cedar Rapids Colonels, and the Quad Cities River Bandits. In Iowa City this past Saturday, the University of Iowa's football team defeated Wisconsin 28-7. And one more note before I wrap this up, and it's about Google. Last week, the company released its top trending searches for Iowa this year. Top trending means searches that had spikes in traffic over a sustained period. Are you ready? The top trending Google searches in the Des Moines area this year were election results, the coronavirus, coronavirus symptoms, the Iowa caucus results, Kobe Bryant, he's the former Los Angeles Lakers basketball star who died in a helicopter crash, the Dow Jones stock averages, Zoom, and Ryan Newman, he's a race car driver. Want some more? How about the top people searches that Iowans made on Google? Here we go. Ryan Newman, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Kim Reynolds, Tom Hanks, Shakira, Joe Exotic, and Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs superstar quarterback. Okay, that's enough for now. I'm Dennis Hart, highly disappointed that no one searched for me on Google, but still forging ahead and promising to return to the same virtual seat on Friday, when I'll have word on what makes news in Ames. Between now and then, stay safe and stay healthy as we all make our way through these unforgettable times.
I'm feeling pretty great. Got lockers on my plate. I love this holiday. I love this holiday. And Kislev is the day. Like candles 1 through 8. Add a new one every day. I love this holiday. His army was so weak, but they still beat the Greeks. Supply of oil wasn't great, but a miracle took place. It burned for 8 whole days, burned for 8 whole days.
So in December, take time to remember, with 4 Hebrew letters spinning round, singing it's gonna be 8 nights.
This is local talk here on KHOI Community Radio. That was 6:13 with Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah. And I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Tune in tomorrow for John and Barbara Pleasant's excellent description of the Hanukkah story and explanation of the story. I love our tradition of playing this recording. Before we go to the next segment, I just want to remind you that KHOI's holiday gift auction is happening, and the deadline for the auction is the 17th at 10 p.m. And we noticed that many of you have, after going through the first auction, have learned the tricks of the trade, and almost nobody has bid yet, and we are hoping that that means that everybody's going to bid, at least on the last day of the auction. There are really, really beautiful items in there. Just yesterday, we added a whole set of vintage radios that were provided by Bob Anders, who is the host of Bob's 8-Track Garage Sale. There's a bunch of vintage radios on there, and one of them is a CD player as well, and one is a cassette player for all of you who are into outdated technology. These are all vintage pieces and lots of fun. And they are a great way to bring KHOI radio into your home. I know a lot of you hear KHOI in the car. And because of that, and there's a, like, listening to the radio at home is a whole different experience, because you kind of go from show to show throughout the day and you really hear the broad spectrum of what KHOI has to offer. So this is a great little thing that you can buy for your home, or it's a great way to give somebody a present. And in this time with COVID, it's really a great idea, because what you would be doing would be bringing KHOI into somebody's house, and we just have a lot to offer these days as people are staying home a lot more. We bring the world to you with KHOI. We have all lost a lot during this pandemic, but we have not lost KHOI, and we want to keep it that way. So help us keep the station funded by going to the auction. The easiest way to do it is to go to our website, khoifm.org, and you'll see a big blue square button that Guillaume put up there. He made it blue so that you absolutely cannot miss it, and it's on the left-hand side of the page on the website, and if you click on that, that'll take you right to the auction. You do have to log in to bid. So you do have to create an account with the auction if you want to bid, but you do not need to log in to look at the auction. And hopefully what you see there will entice you so much that it'll be okay with you to create an account. Now, I have to say one thing. We've done this once before, and we all watched very carefully to see whether the website, which is called 32 Auctions, it's an online auction site, whether they emailed you afterwards with advertisements for other auctions. And in fact, they do not. So if you sign up, you are not going to start getting spammed by the auction website. So many beautiful things in there. I mentioned the vintage radio. Lots of really nice jewelry pieces, which are inexpensive. And there's one thing that never gets any attention, but I think is absolutely wonderful, and I really hope somebody buys it. I think this is a perfect gift for a girl, maybe about 10 years old. There's a box of 25 medallions that come from different ceramic medallion houses around the world, and it's complete with some chains that you can make necklaces, and each medallion has its own little felt pocket that it can fit into to, you know, carry it somewhere. And the medallions are all these beautiful little designs. Most of them are flower designs. Some are not. And it's very, very beautiful. I looked this up online, and it's worth about $400 in the market. We're selling it for, I think, $100 as a starting bid. And I just think this is kind of like a hidden treasure that nobody's fully comprehended yet how lovely this is. So lots of beautiful things. Every single thing's been donated by a KHOI supporter, either donated or may or is a service that they're offering, like Tom Russell will tune your piano. Again, a great opportunity. So once again, just remember the deadline is December 17th, 10 p.m. That's it. Auction websites like this, they're very strict. They get upset if I even change one little thing on the auction website, because they want everything to be above board. So 10 p.m. December 17th is the absolute deadline for everything. So go ahead and take a look. If you bid now, it'll help us because it raises the price, and we're actually trying to raise money here for KHOI. Every single dollar goes to KHOI. Again, the easiest way to go to the auction is to go to khoifm.org, and you'll see the big link that says KHOI Holiday Gift Fair Auction. And while you're there, it's a great place to make a donation to KHOI. We're about halfway. Our goal is to raise $60,000. We are at about $30,000 right now, so we got a long ways to go still. So please help us get to our goal by the end of the year. And if you have donated already, thank you so much. We have been so appreciative of every single donation. Every donation counts a great deal. And this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. And we are going to talk about something that is lots of fun. I'm excited to tell you about this. Trey Moore is a graduate of Iowa State University and a former intern here at KHOI. Trey, I think, was here about a year ago. No, more than, maybe 2 years ago. In the good old days when we had lots of people buzzing around the station. He also is the former editor of Sur Magazine, which was an on-campus magazine, which he transformed into a platform for diversity and chic style. He currently lives in Davenport, but I think is planning to come to Iowa State again for his graduate studies. And he was recently hired to direct a fashion show here in Ames. So welcome back to KHOI, Trey. It's good to have you back. I think you're about to bring us something to see. Tell us about the fashion show.
So the title of the fashion show is Mama Muta. That's MAMAMOUTA! Exclamation point. You can't forget the exclamation point at the end. it's an idea that I came up with while I was, I spent about almost a year in New York before the pandemic hit. And I was just kind of brainstorming and coming up with just different creative ideas. And I journaled it down and I just kind of kept it because sometimes you never know when an idea will be able to manifest and you know, take a physical form. So Rosie Rowe, who was my supervisor when I worked at Parks Library at Iowa State University, she knew the people who are producing it, Lindsay and Sharon, the owners of Reliable Street, also known as Lockwood Cafe, a fairly new place that they rebuilt that once was a factory, and they repurposed it into a cafe and shared space and artistic space. And they actually wanted to do a fashion show to kick off their Winter Olympics that they were hosting, which is going to be a series of events. And Rosie recommended me for the position, and they contacted me, and then I spoke to them, got to meet them. They're amazing people, and they brought me on board to direct their first fashion show event. And this is my first fashion show that I've directed and, you know, got to create from the bottom up, and it's out of Mama Movement.
So this isn't necessarily an Iowa State event. This is kind of a community event, right, at Reliable Street?
Yep, this is a community event.
So I saw just a tiny clip of it. It's very dramatic.
that's the best way to describe it.
And very kind of mysterious. And what I saw was kind of a very dramatic image that said Black Lives Matter, and then this mysterious character came out with a cape. Mm-hmm. And made a very kind of graceful flourish, I think, with the cape. So tell us a little bit about what is the fashion show feature? What are the clothes that are? I mean, this is to show off clothes that are made by whom?
So these clothes are actually all handcrafted by myself, Lindsay, Sharon. Lindsay and Sharon actually hand sewn all of the cloaks and all the garments that you see the models wearing, and then we all came together. We created the masks, and we used just all repurposed materials to create all the garments. So that was something we wanted to focus on, was repurposing, recycling, and using, you know, community resources. And all the members in the show are all from the community as well, all the models and photographers. And so these are people that I got to develop relationships with while I was on campus.
So these are the clothes are made out of recycled?
Yeah, they're things. All made out of recycled materials.
Now, I know that Reliable Street has like a free store for clothing. Did some of the clothes come from there?
We typically left those clothes for other people to come and get, but a lot of them were items that Sharon and Lindsay had already just had from either previous artistic endeavors or just items that I had laying around, and we came together and made the items from those.
This is not going to be an in-person fashion show, right? This is a COVID style fashion show that'll be online.
Yes, it'll be online on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, premiering on December 17th at 7 p.m. On my Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube accounts. And then I'm pretty sure Revival Street will also premiere it on theirs, and we'll both, you know, bring it to our audiences. And due to COVID, it, we would have loved to be able to have people in person to see, you know, because I want it to be a very theatrical event with some sort of acting in the mix of it. But just, you know, due to everything that's happened with COVID, we weren't able to do a physical one.
So is this going to be, I'm trying to understand, is this going to be a live streamed event, one-time event, or is this something that people can view when they want to? Is it something that you can watch at any time?
Yes. Sorry, you guys cut out for a second.
Okay. Well, I was asking, is this something that's going to be like a one-time streamed event, or is this something that's going to be something you can look at whenever you want on the website?
Yeah, no, you'll be able to watch it indefinitely online, but I kind of wanted it to be so we're going to premiere it live so that you can comment and engage with other people watching it at the same time.
So it will be a live event?
Yeah, it's a pre-produced live event, but yeah, for sure.
Uh-huh. So where, when and where, just so that's clear.
Okay, cool. If you follow my Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram accounts, it'll also be available on my website. My Instagram is More of Tre, M-O-O-R-E, of T-R-E. So basically, it's like a spin on my full name, which is Tre Moore. And so that's my website and my Instagram account. So head to those, and you'll be able to check it out on December 17th at 7 p.m.
And is Reliable Street have a place where they're airing it as well?
They have their Instagram profile, so they'll probably be airing it as well.
So this is mostly an Instagram event?
Yeah, social media. I'm trying to do all of our social media platforms, but yes.
So will it be on Facebook as well?
Mm-hmm. It'll be on my Facebook account and probably their Facebook account as well, and also my website.
Okay, So all of those are called More of Tre, right?
yeah, they are.
Okay.
And and so all of them will be streaming at the same time. So I'll be able to engage with all the different audiences that each of those platforms have.
Okay. Now this was filmed already, right? You filmed this.
Yes.
Okay. So just describe it a little bit. What we'll see when we watch this.
So I grew up playing a lot of video games and watching a lot of films, so I was very inspired by, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, The Matrix, you know, very dramatic and theatrical movies with big soundtracks and great costumes and stuff. And so when I go into, you know, fashion, I kind of think in more of a storytelling in like a film. So this would be kind of my own take on all those inspirations that I had. And it's pretty much a metaphorical story on, honestly, my own experience when I went to New York. And it was like this, being from Iowa, because this is a journey. The story is the journey of these five cosmic beings. And they're actually seeking enlightenment. And they encounter this being, this deity, who is the Mama Mutsu character. So that's the star character of the story. And she actually like awakens them because they're in this like lost pier, just kind of wandering through space. And she awakens them. So this is actually part one.
Oh.
There'll actually be a part two show to tell the next leg of the story. And it's a metaphorical story on what I personally went through, you know, going to New York, which being from Davenport, Iowa, is like this great beyond. It's this crazy place that it was just like a whole different lit world to me. And then coming back home actually ended up being like the best thing to happen. And I learned a lot of lessons going out there. So my Mutsa is kind of that coming back home. You know, she represents a lot of things, like literally, you know, mother, you know, home and everything. She like awakens them. So there'll be a cliffhanger at the end of the show, and you'll be able to, you know, just kind of anticipate the part two.
So it sounds kind of like part autobiography, or and part, I guess, fantasy adventure.
Yeah, actually, that's the best. That's an amazing description of it.
And then a fashion show, and by the way, being a fashion show, showing clothes at the same time.
Yep, trying to just mix all those elements together. Some super dramatic music, in acting, and I love all the people that were involved. All the models, they were so down to do the choreographed movements. Lindsay and Sharon are also both very into all the arts. So Sharon actually helped choreograph the movements, and Lindsay was there all the way, like helping, you know, oh, maybe the outfit should be like this, maybe these things should be like that. So it was a very collaborative event. Or even the models were assisting, like, hey, I know you want us to do that. Maybe we should do this movement to transition into that better. And so it was a very collaborative event where everybody involved helped, you know, make this come together.
Sounds super creative.
Yeah, it was amazing. Honestly, it was a very euphoric feeling event.
Okay, well, we're speaking with Trey Moore, who just directed a fashion show, which sounds like a lot of fun. And Trey, you can send us a link to where we can put on our website to make it also easier for people to find it. And it sounds like, I don't know, just like a real kind of mental adventure that can really brighten up things. And thank you so much for joining us this morning. And I look forward to watching it.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. This is a great time. It makes me miss being at KHOI.
Yeah, well, it'll be good to have you back soon in Ames, right?
Yep, I'll see you guys soon.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Trey. And this is Local Talk here on KHOI. Mr. Keith Morgan is here with Les White. Les, are you here with us too?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Les. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about. The first batches of vaccines arrived in the U.S. yesterday, and distribution begins today, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Les White from Public Health and Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency. So give us some information about how this is actually going down. This is phase one?
This is correct. This is phase 1A. So actually phase one has been divided into two sections. Phase 1A includes healthcare workers, which is your EMS as well, personnel, and it also includes long-term care facilities. So we have been working with the hospitals in the county, so Mary Greeley Medical Center as well as Story County Medical Center, and then all the medical clinics in the county as well, to prepare for distribution. In addition to that, we've also worked with our long-term care facilities who have reached an agreement with the pharmacies, either CVS or Walgreens, and those pharmacies then will distribute that vaccine to both the residents as well as the employees in each of those long-term care facilities. They anticipate that that will be the week of December 28th. As you said earlier, distribution of the vaccine is supposed to begin or has begun.
Sorry, the awkward silence. There's a little bit of a delay here with Zoom. I think Les is listening. Anyway, Les, what I was trying to say was, it sounds like with the long-time care facility folks, the pharmacies are the agencies that are distributing the vaccines to them, and for the healthcare workers, that's going through the hospital. Did I understand that correctly?
The vaccines, yes, will be distributed to long-term care, and then they anticipate the week of the 28th
Hi, Ursula. This is Keith, and Les, hopefully you can hear me. Yeah, I heard your question, and yes, there have been arrangements made for the pharmacies to work directly with our long-term care facilities, these nursing homes. A big part of this vaccine is, as you probably heard, the ultra-cold storage aspects of it, and by having it centralized and a centralized distribution system through the pharmacies directly on down to the long-term care facilities, they're maximizing the capability of those larger organizations to provide that logistics support. And Les can also chirp in, but she's been doing a lot of work to be that other pathway and doing a lot of the coordination to get it into the hospitals and into the clinics. So multiple, as you might imagine, this is really difficult because of the aspects of the vaccine, but also where they're going into these long-term care facilities. The workers are working many different shifts, and they're a lot of different places. So they have to coordinate making sure that they get out there and maximize the use of this vaccine.
So now, you know, everybody heard on the news all over yesterday, the vaccines are arriving on Sunday. What does that mean here in Central Iowa? Did vaccines come in, like, did big trucks roll up? And what actually happened yesterday?
In relationship to, there were distribution points set up in Iowa, and those are undisclosed. So I am assuming that the vaccine is traveling to those distribution points here in Iowa. What's happened for us is that we are allocated X amount of doses of vaccine. The first vaccine is made by Pfizer. So we have X amount of doses that will be allocated to Story County. We then are hoping for the arrival of those maybe today or tomorrow. Then there is a second vaccine, Moderna. It has not been approved yet by the FDA. It is due to be approved by them on the 17th. And then the same process will occur. We'll be allocated doses of Moderna, and it will come to Story County Public Health, and then we will allocate it out. And but again, we're not sure of the arrival date of that. So this week, with the vaccine coming, we will allocate then out to the medical centers here in Story County, as well as some of the clinics, medical clinics here in Story County as well. And then we will also hold clinics within our department for the EMS personnel. We anticipate to begin those maybe Thursday or Friday. It really depends, again, on the arrival. ISU, their Thielen Center, will be a part of this as well.
One question I'm trying to understand is that the decision about who gets the vaccine and how it happens, are those decisions that are made locally, or are they made federally or on the state level? Who is actually deciding how to roll this out?
Mm-hmm. It begins at the federal level, and they're the ones that said that the first 1A would go to healthcare workers and long-term care facilities. Then that goes down to the state. The state then provides further guidance in relationship to who should get that vaccine or who, because healthcare workers, there's a lot of healthcare workers. So they help us decide in relationship to the healthcare workers. The other thing that Story County Public Health did is we did ask the facilities to look within their facilities and see, again, who they felt like were those individuals at most risk, so that those individuals within the facility would be able to get the vaccine. Just because the vaccine is limited, you know, in availability at this point in time, they do anticipate after the first of the year, we'll have plenty of doses to vaccinate everybody. But at this point in time, it's limited. So we want to hit those groups where we're going to, that are at the highest risk for the virus.
Mm-hmm. And when you say it's organized at the state level, is this coming from, is there a state agency that is in charge of this, or what exactly does that mean that it's being organized by the state?
For Story County Public Health, our direction comes from the Iowa Department of Public Health.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. And so, you know, the other thing I'm curious about is, you know, much has been said about there's been concern that in the rural areas there's the capacity to store because the vaccine has to be very, very cold, right? That there's been concern about, you know, cold storage capacity in the more
That's
rural
correct.
Areas. How is that playing out? How is that being handled?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the first vaccine, Pfizer, that is an ultra-cold vaccine. So it has to be held in freezers of around minus 70 degrees Celsius. So those are special kinds of freezers. The way that'll work is Mary Greeley Medical Center and McFarland Clinic at this point in time and ISU, we all have freezers that we can handle the vaccine. So for those, for instance, for those like Story County Medical, next week when the Moderna vaccine comes, that vaccine does not have to be held at the ultra cold storage level. So those will be the vaccines then that we will distribute to those folks that do not have the ability to manage the Pfizer with the ultra cold storage.
Uh-huh. So does that mean that healthcare workers and long-term care facility people within the reach of McFarland Clinic and Mary Greeley will get them, and people say like up in, I don't know, counties where that are much more rural, that their hospitals will get them in the second round? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, the only other hospital in Story County that we'll take care of will be Story County Medical Center, and they will look for their doses to come next week.
Right. Well, yeah, I was
at, you know, don't have to be held with that ultra cold storage.
Right. KHOI reaches a lot of counties beyond Story County, so I was thinking about counties like Greene County, you know, north of us, Hamilton and Hardin, where it's very, very rural. And
sure, and I am not sure how.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the other question I had for you real fast, I know that this is just the beginning of the process, so.
Yeah, I am not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, obviously this is a whole new world, right? That, that you are really taking on here.
It's very new for us. We handle vaccine clinics all the time, but this is a different type of, we've never had a vaccine that we've had to use ultra cold storage for.
But. Right. And also that almost, you know, that applies to almost everybody in the whole single world. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'm curious before you go, I know that, we really need to have you come back in 2 months, you know, when this has become something that has been worked out fully to find out what happened. But I'm curious, is there any provisions being made for monitor? I know that people have to come back for a second dosage with this one, right?
That is correct. With the first two vaccines, there are follow-up vaccines.
Right.
With the Pfizer, it'll be in 3 weeks.
Is there anything being put in place to kind of monitor for reactions to the virus, to the vaccine, or to some way to monitor how long that it actually lasts, the protection? Is anything being put in place now at the onset?
We'll be more involved with those that may have a reaction to the vaccine. And, of course, if they do have some kind of a reaction, we'll encourage them to either reach out to their to the individual or to the organization where they got their vaccine, and then we will be monitoring all that, and we will be recording that and sending that back then up to the Iowa Department of Public Health, and then I believe they forward that information onto the federal level so they're aware of what is happening with the vaccine. I'm sure at the local level, as far as how long the vaccine works, we won't be doing Story County Public Health anyway, will not be doing any research in relationship to that. But I do know there will be, I'm sure, ongoing research at the federal level to know exactly how long this vaccine will last and if you will need a booster. You know, like a lot of vaccines that we get today, we do have to have boosters periodically. Mm-hmm. This could be the case with this one. But at this point in time, I do not know.
You don't know. Yeah. So I guess because you're vaccinating first the folks in the healthcare facility, I mean, in hospitals and clinics, and also
in long-term facilities, you're able to put things in place right away to monitor whether there's a reaction to the vaccine or not, because it's a limited setting, right?
That is correct, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for kind of giving us the beginning of this process. Is there anything else that you can share with us about how this has been to set this up?
As Keith said, it sounds like it should be a very simple process, but it is complicated. We will be taking into considerations for all of the clinics, all the individuals that we worked with, as well as the clinics that we hold for the EMS here in our building, all of those public health mitigation. So, and once you do get the vaccine, it's going to be important for you to continue those mitigations. You're still going to need to wear a mask. We encourage social distancing as well as small gatherings. So we'll continue that, as good hand washing is always a necessity. So we'll instruct people to continue that as well. But all the clinics will be handling these social mitigations as well. So a little bit different. These will be more by appointment type clinics. And so we will we'll let you know how it all goes and
okay.
how we've done in our planning.
Okay. So we look forward to speaking with you in about a week or two, or maybe about a month, just to find out how this actually has worked out.
That sounds fine.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the work you're doing. It's a lot. It's a lot to take
on. Thank
you. Yeah. Keith, any last words before we move on?
No, it's just this is just an example of the partnership that we have to have with the public, with all the different agencies. As Les said, we're not out of the woods yet. People need to do all of those mitigation efforts. And behind the scenes, you're going to see a lot of coordination going on to move us towards everybody getting the vaccine and moving us out of this situation that we're in now.
Okay. Well, thank you. Speaking with Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Services and Les White from Public Health, talking about phase 1A of the vaccine distribution, which is focused on people in long-term healthcare facilities and in the medical profession, and to be continued, right? Thank you guys for coming. Really appreciate you coming and giving us the information. Anna, you there? We're cutting you really short, but do you have a heart-to-heart message before we end the show?
I do have a heart-to-heart message that's dedicated to you, Ursula. So I see you've got 1 minute. So let's see if I can do this.
All right.
It's titled Coffee for Everyone. The main conceit of the 2000 Kevin Spacey film, Pay It Forward, is that if one person does a kindness for three strangers, and those three people each do kindness for three strangers, and so on, one person can change the world. So this all started in Bluffington, South Carolina. It all started 2 years ago at Corner Perk, a small, locally owned coffee shop, when a customer paid her bill and left $100 extra, saying she wanted to pay for everyone who ordered after her until the money ran out. The staff fulfilled a request, and the woman, who wishes to remain anonymous, has returned to leave other large donations every 2 to 3 months. People will come in and say, "What do you mean? I don't understand. Are you trying to buy me a coffee today?" The shop's owner, Josh Cook, told the local news, and I say, "No, somebody came in 30 minutes ago and left money to pay for drinks until it runs out." It took a while, but the word has started to spread around the tiny coastal town, home to about 12,000 people. Now, more and more customers have been leaving money to pay for others' food and drink. Cook says some people don't even buy anything when they come in. They just stop to donate and head right back out. A medium cup of coffee at Corner Perk costs $1.95. That may not seem like a lot, but for a family struggling to save money in these tense and difficult economic times, $2 saved at the right moment probably feels like a million. And a jolt of generosity is a better pick-me-up than caffeine any day of the week. And I think you know why, Ursula, I picked that, because we both love you-know-where, and we have been the recipient of a free coffee at that place on Sheldon Avenue, our Ames. And then the last one...
You're talking about the Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm an addict. I love it. And I do love it when somebody pays in front, and I come up to the drive-thru to get my five Splenda coffee, and they're like, "It's already paid for," and it just makes my day. I love
it. This is a thing that's kind of developed between Dunkin' Donuts buyers. There's a drive-thru there, And when you drive through, very often when you drive up to the window, they say, oh, well, the person in front of you paid for it. So it's a culture of paying it forward. It's particular to Dunkin' Donuts in Campus Town.
Yeah, well, I love that. So this one came from a Random Acts of Kindness book that started in Bluffton, South Carolina. It happens here in Ames, Iowa as well, which I just love. And then my final heart-to-heart message for the day is from Lao Tzu. By the accident of fortune, a man may rule the world for a time, but by virtue of love and kindness, he may rule the world forever.
Aww.
So that's my heart-to-heart message, Ursula.
Thank you, Miss Anna Banana. And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Anna Banana and Michael Murphy at the controls. Thank you, Michael. It's been an interesting morning, technically. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. And remember that you can also hear a recording of the show later online at khoifm.org with links to the guests, and we'll get a link to Trey's fashion show, the Reliable Street Fashion Show. Please visit the KHOI Holiday Gift Auction. Closes by December 17th, 10 p.m., and you can go to khoifm.org and find the link there. And while you're there, also please donate to KHOI. We need the money. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI not only meaningful by listening to us, but also possible by donating to us. Thank you for listening. And Anna?
We'll see you again on the radio.
Yes, ma'am.